You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How you doing, Pat?
I'm excellent. Another exciting episode. Seems like it's been a long time.
Another year older, right?
Yeah, my birthday was 2 days ago. 2 days ago, yeah. Actually, no, it was yesterday. I forget. It's all
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Another year. Joining us tonight, we got a great guest. We got Robert McNamara, who's one of the Myth TV developers. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, guys, and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Robert, you're our first actual Myth TV developer.
Well, hopefully the first of a couple. We're trying to sort of turn over a new leaf in the last year or two and have a little more active involvement with the user base. So hopefully we can start a trend here.
That'd be great. We'd love to have you guys come on anytime. It's cool talking to you. Both Dan and myself are both programmers, too. So, you know, we can speak the lingo with you. It's not a problem. We're both longtime Myth TV users. So,
I think I first want to start off by saying thank you for everything that you do, because we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for Myth TV being here. So,
no, absolutely. And, I think it's all about having fun and we have a good time doing it. And certainly I don't deserve the lion's share of the thanks for much of what you guys enjoy. But I have a good time doing it, and hopefully we continue to do you guys proud.
I guess, Robert, just take us back and tell us about your usage of MIT TV and your involvement with the project. You know, what are some of the things you've been involved with over the years?
Well, I'm sort of one of the newer MIT TV devs as the core group goes. I've only really been involved for the last year and a half as a developer. And actually, in contrast to you guys, I'm not a programmer by trade. I just play one on TV. I have been involved with MIT TV for a very long time. And so my first involvement in terms of submitting my work was a lot of improvements to MIT Video. Little stuff at first, but the guy who was sort of, had the stewardship of Myth Video at that time, was really encouraging, really helpful. And so my stuff just got, bigger and bigger, and until ultimately, just before 2.2, I wrote the fan art support and the banner support and the screenshot support and sort of the support for television grabbing and a number of other things in Myth Video that I think were kind of, the whiz-bang Myth Video features of 2.2. And a little while after that, I was invited to sort of join the group and have some responsibility for Myth Video myself. And then over the last year and a half, I've had the opportunity to do some other stuff, collaborating with a lot of the guys. Wrote the Myth NetVision plugin, collaborating with Doug Vaughn, who you guys, I think, also know from writing the Jammu utility. And he also wrote both of our grabbers for the movie DB and the TV DB, and basically has written all of the scripts for NetVision, including a bunch of cool ones for what will ultimately be 2.4, a Hulu grabber, a PBS grabber, a bunch of really, really cool stuff that's going to make the plugin just really sing. And we collaborated on that, and we've been continuing to do so, up until right now. And then over the last few months, I worked on integrating the Lib Blu-ray library into Myth TV. So we imported our own copy of that a few months ago, and we gained basic Blu-ray structure playback of the Blu-ray disc structures, and if such a thing existed, a unencrypted Blu-ray disc. And then working with some of the really fantastic guys, some of the guys who really deserve your thanks, for some of the major, major changes in this studio over the last few years. Guys like Stuart Morgan and Mark Kendall and Michael Dean and Johnny Davenard and those guys, we've sort of worked on all aspects of Blu-ray playback over the last couple of months, culminating in yesterday. I played the first encrypted Blu-ray disc in MIPS TV with chapter support.
Awesome.
With title switching support, straight off the disc.
That's great news.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely non-trivial to set up. The MIPS TV part of it is all automatic. And I, you know, I don't think that I'm exaggerating when I say that that MIPS TV is most definitely the most advanced Blu-ray experience you can have in Linux right now. It's not perfect. It's not, you know, it's got a long way to go. You know, no menus yet. There's some little, little polished things that we're working on that will hopefully be improved before 2.4. But by far, in terms of features, in terms of, supported abilities, and just out of the box playing the material, MIPS TV is by far the leader in that right now.
Because
I'm sure there'll be some given.
Right now, I don't think MPlayer or VLC have support for Blu-ray playback. I think MintTV is the first in Linux, right?
Nope. You know, absolutely. None of them have support out of the box. The only other, here's the thing. Until last week, there was actually no public repository for Lib Blu-ray. It was private, so I kind of had to turn on the charm a little bit and get a copy of Lib Blu-ray a few months ago, and that's the copy we imported. And actually, yesterday morning is when Lib AACS, which is sort of half the encryption, decryption equation of Blu-ray playback, they released their first little public snapshot. And by evening, because of some of the background work that we've been doing over the last few months, by evening, we had, I had successfully played a disc.
That's awesome. This is absolutely a great accomplishment, and kudos to everybody who's worked on it and made it happen. I'm sure this
it's
going to be greatly appreciated by everybody in the Linux community.
Oh, yeah, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And, you know, I was thinking about it a lot today, knowing that I was going to talk to you guys. And it really is, you know, what we've done with the Blu-ray stuff over the last couple of months, I mean, it's the essence of what open source software development. You know, you throw something out there, someone else takes an interest and adds, you know, chapter support. You know, I did the latest resync to this library with MIPS a couple of weeks ago, and by the end of the day, Mark Kendall had added chapter. You know, and by the next day, Taylor Ralph, one of our other devs, had fixed this long-standing speaking issue with Blu-ray. And, this stuff is just coming fast and furious right now, and I think 2.4 is going to be a really, really fantastic release.
So that's my question is, you know, when are we going to see this implemented in a stable release? And you're saying 2.4?
Yeah, 2.4. 2.4 is upcoming. You guys have been longtime MIPS TV users, so maybe I have a question for you, which is, how are we doing in the last year? Because I think there have been a lot of, attitude changes and sort of a change in focus to more user-based, user experience stuff over the last year. And we've implemented the quicker release cycle. So 2.4 will be the same interval from 2.3 as 2.3 was from 2.2. We're going to freeze September 1st. Aiming at an October 1st release of 2.4.
Nice.
You know, I'm sorry?
I said nice. So.
Yeah. So, that's the aim. It always slips a little bit because there's always some blocker bug that comes up. But that's the goal right now, is to look at October 1st as 2.4 so that we can, things, we all have families and loved ones and responsibilities. So things tend to quiet down a little bit around the holidays. And we didn't want to be aiming at a release, December 1st, January 1st. So we sort of decided to go another four-month release cycle, hopefully for 2.5 to come out February, March.
That's awesome. I really like the direction of the project in the last year or two. You guys have really stepped it up. You've improved the interface greatly, which is really nice. You've finally have support for VDPAU, the Hot Park PVR 1212, which is huge, for doing HD capture over a component for, satellite and cable boxes. That to me, those were the big things, along with VDPAU implementation, getting that stable. So those are the really
the UI enhancements alone, I think, are what are going to really, you know, kind of make people, you know, look at it again as compared to something like XBMC or Boxy or something like that. And I and along with that, the back-end stuff that goes in there, I run multiple back-ends, so the storage groups and being able to not have to reconfigure all of my back-end machines to all point to the, you know, to the main box. Well, right now just for videos, but I'm assuming all the, you know, the music and everything like that is coming as well. All of that stuff together, I think, has been just a tremendous, you know, boost to productivity and getting the thing set up and everything like that, and just overall ease of use once you do finally have it set up.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you guys like the steps that we've taken so far. You know, definitely, since we haven't had a lot of this kind of interaction with, you know, with you guys and with the users, you know, I want to recognize who's responsible for those things. You mentioned the UI. That's Stuart Morgan's work and a lot of hard work by Paul Harrison. Those guys did the MIF UI conversion, you know, almost single-handedly. It's not done yet. There's a ton planned for that stuff. And, you know, yes, the UI is looking better, but those guys have amazing plans for it. You know, the VDPAU stuff, you know, the initial work was by Isaac Richards, and then Mark Kendall has taken over it. And I don't know if you guys follow our development branch at all, but Mark Kendall has totally rewritten the video output stuff. He's got basic patches for the Mac OS X acceleration, for the VA API acceleration, so that's like the Intel and the API acceleration. He's got Windows acceleration working, and that guy's a monster. You know, and he's just been churning out amazing stuff for the last year at least, if not more. You know, Paul Harrison's rewriting MIF music right now. You know, I've listened to you guys' show before, and we know what the common complaints are, you know, about MIF music UI. You know, those are all being addressed. You know, Paul is rewriting it to be themable, just like the video and the rest of the UI.
That'd be great.
He's really looking. You know, the problem with MIF music has been in the past that you know, that the UI and the data access stuff are so tightly integrated, and he is really working to separate that stuff out so that the UI and the fundamental music player stuff are separated, which is something that was really necessary. You know, it was a MIF dev that wrote the Linux driver for the Hotbug HDPVR. You know, so just a ton of guys doing good work, and I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure that I'm missing someone, but those are really the four guys. You know, you've got Rob Smith and Chris Peterson working hard on MythWeb, Chris Pinkham, who's writing some amazing stuff right now. You know, in 2.4, you're going to be able to pull up the theme picker, all nicely UI'd. It's going to connect to the MythTV website, find all of the downloadable themes. You're going to be able to pick from any available MythTV theme. It's always, you know, when you pick it, the backend's going to download it and make it available across your network. You know, just amazing fundamental stuff by these guys. And yes, you know, we're going to be using storage groups for music.
That's great, because storage groups, and I want to agree with Dan, storage groups have been a godsend. And if anybody who has, like, multiple front ends, it's such a time saver. It just makes it seamless.
Right. You know, not needing to set up NFS or Samba. And no, obviously, you know, as basically the person who is in charge of MIF video right now, you know, I recognize the deficiencies of, you know, obviously people want to play ISOs, they want to play video TS directories, and now with Blu-rays, there's these BDMB directories, Blu-ray directories. You know, we recognize that there's a missing piece there, and that's why we've not completely removed the local storage stuff, but it's stuff that we want to address. You know, it's very much a work in progress, and stuff that it's sort of on everyone's radar. But there's just, you know, oh, and I'm sorry, you know, one of the other ones that's going to be a huge deal to users like you guys and everybody else, Daniel Christensen has been working on moving our whole setup, you know, the whole MIF TV setup deal, into the back-end web server, basically allowing one to just bring up the back-end, connect with a web browser, and do all the configuration through a browser, and
wow.
Simplifying that stuff. You know, we're gonna auto detect cards, and that's longer term work. You know, we're looking at 2.5 or 2.6 for that stuff. but the releases are going to come fast. So, you know, that's stuff that I think I see all of us having a hand in over the next year, but particularly Daniel, who's been working on that stuff for the last couple months, and I think that he's going to pick up work on that again, probably right after we get it 2.4 out.
Yeah, you guys, you know, I look at, like, some of the different open source projects that are real superstars, and MythTV is definitely one of them, in my opinion. You know, there's a handful of applications out there that you can't, like, ignore, because they're just so good, such quality stuff you guys put out. You know, just the development that you've done, it's really amazing. You know, it really is, and I can't you know, say thank you enough to you guys for all the stuff you do.
No, I think you know, none of us would do it if we weren't having a good time doing it. You know, and I think that there are a few projects that have as ambitious a focus as MythTV does. You know, you've got something like XBMC, which has a phenomenal UI. You know, and obviously we aspire to have similar themeability in our UI. But obviously their focus is pretty narrow. You know, they want to organize media you already have. Or you look at something like MPlayer, where all they have to do is maintain, it's a huge job, obviously, but their primary focus is maintain this player that can play anything. Well, MythTV takes on all of those things, and we're a DVR. You know, like, we aim to competently organize your media, to be able to play it anywhere, to make that experience beautiful, and to be able to, you know, our core competency is really the DVR stuff. You know, so we have this huge breadth of focus. You know, and you know, I understand that there's sometimes some user frustration at this or that, you know, but it helps to take a step back and say, you know, these guys aim to do more than any one project out there aims to do. But I really appreciate the compliment, and I'm sure the other guys, when they hear this, will be equally appreciative.
I mean, you look at what MythTV is capable of and what it does and everything, and it compares very well against commercial products that have, you know, professional paid developers working full time on it, you know, sometimes 24/7. I'm sure these guys have, you know, guys overseas in different locations working on it, you know, when different teams, you know, working on different pieces of it. And you look at, like, you know, how Myth compares to, like, TiVo or Apple TV. Well, Apple TV is not really DVR, but, you know, it's a multimedia product. You guys are really good, and compared to them, you exceed what the capabilities and what they can do. It's really amazing.
Well, thank you for that. You know, and thank you for keeping it in perspective. You know, there's nobody that's going to agree with every decision we make, especially as we make some hard decisions, you know, moving into the future. You know, we've already sort of started to cull the settings, you know, back into something more sane. You know, that there doesn't need to be a knob for everything. I think something that we've all started to agree on. You know, there doesn't need to be support for legacy hardware from the early 90s. You know, we've started dumping some of that older code, you know, like the original Xbox code, or support for the, you know, like the API of the PVR350's TV output. You know, I think those are decisions that are going to make a limited number of users irritated, but ultimately they're decisions that we need to make Myth into something as beautiful as XBMC, or as competent a player as MPlayer, or any one of those things whose core focus is more laser sharp, you know?
I mean, you talked about, you know, the Myth music being rewritten. You know, that's great that you guys are addressing
right.
It. I'm ecstatic that you're working on it. I'm sure it's going to be great once it's done. One of the other areas I think that really needs to be addressed is configuration of QAM cards. Now, I know the QAM stuff has been around for a while, but the fact that, you know, we've gone through the digital transition here in the States, you know, most people are going all HD now. It's become a little more prevalent, a little more noticeable, and it's tough because QAM, you know, it's almost like you got to take two steps back to do the configurations and everything. It's still very manual, you know, and
you're talking about, like, associating an XML TV ID with with a channel and channel numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not all that clear to, like, you know, I've talked to people who are new at it, and that seems to be a real problem spot. You know, they get a QAM card, or they get an HD home run, and you know, they want, you know, they don't know all the steps put together, you know, how to do everything, And then that seems right. seems to be, you know, a big problem. I mean, even I, when I first started playing with Qwom, you know, I spoke to Dan, and Dan was like, you know, this is what you do. You go into the web, Myth Web, you know, you go here, you just change the XML IDs. You know, once you do it and you explain it, it's a lot more clearer.
Right. Well, you know, there's probably a number of fronts on which we can address that kind of thing. The first one, as I mentioned, is that we're rewriting the setup in general. And that kind of gives us an opportunity to take a step back and say, okay, how could this be better? And, you know, and again, with that new focus over the last year of, you know, how can I make my mom capable of setting up this box? You know, how can I make my girlfriend capable of setting up this box? I think that we're looking at things differently. And that's one thing. Another thing, we've sort of improved our relationship with the guys at Silicon Dust over the last few months, to the extent that they're actually going to handle DHT home run tickets, and they're sort of providing us with regular library updates and stuff like that. And one of their things that's coming out with their new cable card enabled HD home run is the ability to actually pull in the virtual channel number. And so that's something that, you know, I would be interested in getting involved with those guys and saying, hey, you know, can we use your infrastructure to do these translations? You know, not to give an excuse because I am not in the business of making excuses, but, you know, finding solutions. Every DVR software, every hobbyist DVR software is sort of plagued with the same issue.
Absolutely. I hear Windows guys who run, like, Sage TV. You know, I listen to their podcast. They had that HTPC podcast, and those guys are mostly Windows people. Okay. And they complain sure. about setting up, you know, Windows Home Media Edition or Sage TV. And it's not easy in any setup that you do.
Right. You know, so obviously we're all sort of facing the same issue. But I think that there's a couple of ways out. It may never be perfect because, you know, kind of by default, those cable companies, they don't want to make it easy for you to, you know, to create your own DVR. You know, they're going to give you the...
No, not one bit.
Even for over the air, you know, it could be simpler. And I've thought about what it would take, and the real issue is that, you know, it's all very local, depending upon where you live. You know, you're not going to get the same channels as somebody who lives, you know, 100 miles away from you, and the frequencies are going to be all different depending on where you are. So it's a very localized thing.
Somewhat, you know, it's a little more simple with over the air because the scanned channel numbers and sub channels are going to directly map to a scheduled direct over the air lineup. You know, so if you scan, you know, say here PBS is 9-1 over the air and as well as via Qwom, and if you associate that with a scheduled direct lineup, you know, of the over the air lineup, and then you run this bill database, it's going to actually associate the XML TV ID for you. So over the air is sort of a bit of a different animal because you can actually do it as though it were an analog setup. But I agree with you that Qwom is not perfect. You know, it's just one of those things. I think that we can make better. I'm just not certain how perfect it will ever be.
Short of, you know, I'm thinking of two different approaches to tackle this. You know, one approach is from a programming standpoint, and that's probably the more difficult way to do it. I think maybe the more easier way to do it is maybe almost have a database of channel lineups that people have reported. I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time to collect the data from everybody.
That's actually what I'm referring to with Silicon Dust, who they have by default their HD home run phone home. And a lot of people don't know that, but they do. They send back a scanned lineup at some regular interval, which is how, if you go to the Silicon Dust website, it's how you're able to pull up. You know, you're able to pull up the lineup that you would get and check and see what channels you would get locally, both over the air and via Qwom. They actually have a service that I don't know if they've made public yet. They do have a service that maps that to the virtual channel, you know, that changes 9-1709, for example. And so those are the guys who may be equipped to do it, and they might be inclined, given our cordial relationship, especially lately.
They've been great, Silicon Dust. You know, they've had very good Linux support for quite some time now. And in fact, you know, their application that you can use to tune into channels, you know, that stuff is all in, you know, I know it's in the Mythbuntu repositories. I'm not sure about some of the other distributions, but you know, the stuff is in there and it's maintained and they push down firmwares. And it seems like they're one of the few companies that actually, you know, recognize that there's Linux people out there and they're buyers of their products.
Yeah, well, you know, the guy who started Silicon Dust is MythTV user.
Really?
Yeah, and I, you know, he's actually sort of our point of contact with those guys, and I chat with them, you know, on IRC infrequently, you know, if there's an issue or when, you know, when we've seen some HD home run issues. A super responsive guy, very interested in seeing MythTV improve, which is why I say, you know, and I haven't broached this topic with them, but those may be the guys who might be able to share out some of that data to do that mapping. You're right, it's going to take a creative solution to find, you know, to find a more friendly way to handle QAM lineup.
I mean, it's a great product.
It would be nice if we could piggyback on with, like, the Schedules Direct guys to see if that could all be, you know, grabbed right into their database of everything.
Right, and as you guys probably know, the Schedules Direct board sort of reads like a who's who of MythTV developers. You know, there's some XMLTV guys there and a couple of other guys on that board, but really the guys who started Schedules Direct, you know, that was out of necessity when Zap2 had turned us off, you know, a few years ago. And, you know, and something that I guess I should make a point of is that, you know, so sometimes there's some misunderstanding about Schedules Direct as though it's, you know, it's basically a way to funnel MythTV users in and make a profit. It's a not-for-profit organization. You know, it's not as though anybody from MythTV is getting anything out of that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that kind of liaison would make sense.
Yeah, great, great product. I have one. I absolutely love the thing. It works great with Myth. And it seems to work, you know, well with other products too, you know, other DVR systems like Sage TV and whatnot. You know, so it seems to be, you know, all around, it's excellent.
Yeah, a lot of satisfied customers there. I do not own one, but you know, my experience with those guys there and, you know, my general experience helping people out on Freenode, on the IRC channel, has been enormously, overwhelmingly positive when it comes to the HD Homer.
Now, speaking of the mailing list, you know, you're very active in the mailing list. That's how I became, you know, familiar with you. You know, you seem to, you know, you answer quite a lot of, you know, people's questions and, you know, postings. You respond pretty quickly and, you know, pretty often.
Less than I used to, but, you know, I try and stay out of the users list as much as possible because, you know, it can be a little demoralizing sometimes.
Well, you know, not for nothing, these lists, a lot of the people that go in there are having issues, and it's a way for them to vent and try to get, you know, solutions to their issues.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to forgive a certain amount of frustration on the part of new users. It's when the usual suspects turn up for their pet issues that it gets a little, you know, it can get a little frustrating. And you know, and I'll be, you know, I'll be frank with you guys and say that, you know, a lot of the MythTV devs, we don't pay as much attention to the users list as maybe we should. And again, that's another thing I think we're trying to change. But I think it's sort of like a Pavlovian thing, you know? You reach out and you get smacked. You reach out and you get smacked. You reach out and you get smacked. You know, eventually you just don't reach out anymore.
I think that's just the nature of open source projects. You know, not for nothing. People are quiet when things are going well and everything's cool. And then as soon as, you know, something goes south, you know, everybody starts screaming. That's just the nature of it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, but, you know, to look at it from the other perspective, you can't blame people for being frustrated when they're putting in what little spare time they have, you know,
right.
and the only thing that they hear about it is whining. And that's not, you know, that's not to say that I am, you know, anti-user. If anything, you know, I think that I'm probably one of the most pro-user people on the team. But, you know, I think that there just needs to be, we need to kind of come to a new accord. And I think that that's something we're doing. You know, it's sort of an open secret amongst us. I think it's probably safe to share with you guys. You know, we've undergone some organizational changes over the last month or so. Rather than having a single project lead now, Isaac Richards, been really busy with his job and his family over the last couple of years, and so a couple of other guys have sort of stepped in to be our sort of co-leads. We're reorganizing the project under a MythTV corporation, sort of offer us some amount of protection, and so we're going to actually have a MythTV board. We have a three-member steering committee, basically, which is our project lead, and that's Chris Peterson, Chris Pinkham, and Yanni Grunau, who are all just, I mean, those are guys who are respected within the project, they're respected by users, and they're respected all over the place, you know. And those guys are going to be great for us, having you know, some really active leadership. These guys are all doing good work. You know, I think you guys are going to see more positive changes coming from us. And hopefully, you know, the community benefits.
It's great news that you guys are getting more organized, and it would really be beneficial if there was some, you know, besides a mailing list, some organized way for people to, you know, communicate and give suggestions and just lend an open ear sometimes to people. I think, you know, going both ways, you know, looking at it from a developer standpoint as well as a user standpoint, it really is. You know, we need each other, and I think the relationship could be, you know, stronger and more symbiotic.
Yeah, it's a tough tightrope to walk. You know, when I first came on as a developer, I went to the wiki feature suggestion page, which is our official way of getting feature requests, and I implemented every Smith Video feature suggestion that was not completely insane. Yeah, and there's some insane ones, you know. We don't take feature suggestions in track. It's just, you know, we've got something in the area of 430 open tickets right now.
That's a lot.
and those are, yeah, I mean, those are all, you know, honest to goodness bugs. But, you know, we've done some talking as part of this reorganization in the last month. You know, how can we take feature suggestions, so on and so forth. You know, the big thing with feature suggestions is it feels a lot like having a boss. You know, there's very little in the way of feature suggestions that one of us has not thought about or got on our list somewhere, if it's a decent feature suggestion. Our shortage in general is not ideas, man. So when we get patches that, you know, that have new features or have some sensible, we try and get on them quick. And that's another thing that we're trying to do better, I think. You know, I applied a ticket 106 seconds after it was submitted today. You know, I think in general that we're trying to address tickets faster. We're trying to clear out some of these ancient legacy tickets that nobody's ever gonna handle. But when it comes to our project, at least, you know, code talks louder than ideas.
Well, let me ask you: when you guys get near a release, you know, you go through a feature freeze, and you get to the point where you're just eliminating bugs. I mean, at what point does the decision get made that, okay, this release is ready, we're ready to go? What's is there a number of tickets that are open? Is there, like, you know, critical bugs?
It's not that. Well, I mean, somewhat. We won't release with a blocker. So anything that is anything that's classed as a blocker, as classed by the developers as a blocker bug. You know, so we're talking, you know, I type myth front end and it crashes, or, you know, I tried to record Dora the Explorer and all I got was hardcore pornography. I mean, those are things that would keep us from going out with that. I mean, that sounds like feature to me, but, those are the kinds of things that keep us from going to release. In general, we have a date in mind. You know, like I said, we're looking at October 1st as our release date right now. But if October 1st rolls around and we've got one of those bugs, it's going to sit until that bug gets, bug's going to need to get fixed. We're going to need to cut a release candidate. We're going to push it out, and we're probably going to look for, you know, 5-6 days without a block or bug report before we decide to call that release candidate a release. That's basically it. We've got a date that we're aiming at, and that date can get pushed back by severe bugs.
Well, the other thing.
Let me ask you actually about help here. You said you're lacking in manpower and stuff like that, and, you know, and I mean, I'm a developer. I would love to be able to get in there and help out. My expertise lies mostly in the web. So I have actually had a lot of ideas and a lot of things that I've been trying to, you know, mess around with MythWeb specifically. And I'm really interested in what you're saying about the, you know, being able to configure everything, moving all of that stuff to MythWeb. You know, I'm a lot of questions are running around my head, like, how is that going to span, like, all the back ends and that kind of stuff? Because that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at now having. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let me clarify that Myth backend itself contains a web.
Yes, it does.
When I'm saying we're moving the setup to the back end, I'm actually talking about moving the setup itself, the functionality of Myth TV setup into Myth back end itself. So you'd actually spawn Myth back end, connect to whatever, you know, 127.0.0.1:6544.
Right.
Do all your setup right there. So I'm not talking about moving
right.
to the
okay.
web.
But oh, okay, I got you. I got what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
That said, MythWeb is an area where we could definitely, you know, throw patches in track, you know? Just, you mm-hmm. know, and don't be discouraged. If you write some feature and Rob Smith or Chris Peterson says, I'm just not sure that's quite right, show up on IRC. You know, come to MythTV
right.
on Freenode. You know, come talk to those guys who are always around, both of them. Or one of us will point you at who they are, and you can just sort of wait to pounce on them. Persistence and willingness to take constructive criticism would be the number one and two things that we're looking for from people.
Right. Right?
If somebody comes in, they're like, "Hey, how come my patch isn't committed yet?" That's going to get that patch committed.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know,
great.
If you have some interest in expanding MythWeb, you know, drop by, come talk to us, say, "Hey, I'm thinking about implementing XYZ," you know, and you know, we'll point you at the right guys. And this holds true for everybody. You know, if you've got some interest in expanding any part of Myth, pretty much everybody with responsibility for some core part of Myth always hangs out in IRC with one or two exceptions, and we can still put you in touch with those guys, you know?
Right.
So a little persistence
okay.
and a little willingness to say, hey, you know, to have a little discussion first, you know, that's stuff that we profoundly appreciate.
Great. And that's what I'll be doing.
That's cool.
Yeah,
we do. Can we talk a little bit about MythNetVision? It's a fairly new plugin. You can take us back and
right.
why you wanted to design it. And what was it you were trying to accomplish, and where's it going?
you know, honestly, I don't watch a lot of internet video content, or I had not before Doug Vaughn wrote MiroBridge. And I will be frank in saying, and he's going to hear this and he's going to yell at me, but I'll be frank in telling you that I shared with him when he was writing it, you know, I don't know, man, I don't think I'm ever going to use this thing. Well, the MiroBridge content has become a lot of what I watch, you know, all the Revision 3 stuff, you know, and all this other great content out there available as a podcast. And so I think sometime about a year ago, you know, a lot of us were talking about Hulu Desktop, about, you know, things like in Boxy or XBMC where they're scraping these sites, where they're basically illicitly taking the content, repackaging it, and using it branded, you know, under their own brand. And so my argument was, I think we can do this while still respecting everybody's terms of service. Now, granted, you could write a grabber for MythNetVision that provided all the download links for everything at YouTube and you know, you can do whatever you want. We're just not going to distribute it. That said, every grabber we have in MythNetVision, and I think it's about 20 grabbers now. I mean, and really, Hulu, the WB, CBS, YouTube, Vimeo, I mean, you know, just big name stuff. All of that stuff, in terms of service to clients, it aggregates it, I think, in an attractive way. You know, because my familiarity was with MythVideo, MythNetVision is very similar in form and functionality, you know. So somebody who is familiar with MythVideo will be familiar in browsing a site tree in MythNetVision. And you know, the only really new thing that it adds is the ability to search each of these sites. But basically, you know, I went to Doug Vaughn. I said, "Hey, I got this idea for this thing. You know, here's the idea. You know, we've got all these people spawning Boxy or spawning Hulu Desktop or whatever. I think that in two or three releases of this plugin, that we could eliminate the need to do that. And that we could do it in a way that's terms of service compliant and is fun to use and is more attractive and it's consistent with the rest of the UI." So he agreed, and we sort of hammered out a basic XML format. That's basically what these grabbers do. They parse a site and they spit out XML that is a very, very slightly modified RSS 2.0 format. So sort of by default, because of the way that we structured the XML format, MythNetVision also supports podcasts. So you add a video podcast site, and it behaves as anything else in MythNetVision. So, you know, Revision 3 RSS feeds or whatever you want. And so that's where we're at right now. It's imperfect and it's unfinished. We've got a couple of things we want to do. We want to improve the Myth browser experience. Paul Harrison has expressed some interest in maybe writing a full-screen browser mode so that when we open a full-screen Flash player, it's literally just a full-screen player. We're looking at trying to solve some of the Flash focus issues if we can. And one of the big things that I've been working on the past couple of weeks are starting to really handle downloaded material better. So I'm not making any promises, but my hope is that for, you know, Midnight Vision can present each item as a web viewable item, as well as a downloadable link. So my hope is that by 2.4 I'll manage to finish the work where you can watch whatever you want on the web, or you can, for those drivers that support it and where it's terms of service compliant, you can say, download this item. Fans, MythNet Vision grabbers can present a download link and a web playback link. Right now, the download link doesn't do a whole lot. It goes to, you know, your home directory .mythtv, and it's there. That's just there as a stub right now. What I've been working on the last couple of weeks is telling the back end to download, and this is, by the way, on the back of great work by Chris Pinkham, being able to say to the back end, hey, download this file for me, download it to the recording storage group, and tell me when you've got, you know, send me an event when you've got a certain amount buffered. And you listen to that event, and then as soon as it's buffered up, start playing it back. The back end's still downloading it, you know, almost like it's making the recording from the internet. You watch the video. When you're done with that, with the playback, with the download, and I'm not sure I'm going to get this part done for 2.4, but certainly by 2.5, you're like, hey, I really liked that video. So you go to watch recording, and there's the video.
That sounds great. That's almost like what Mirror Bridge does, right? Where, you know, they show up in your recordings.
Basically, the idea is to sort of obviate Mirror Bridge, and I say that with utmost respect to Mirror Bridge. I think Doug and I are both aiming at making it superfluous by incorporating all that functionality into the front end and back end.
I guess what you know he's doing with Mirror Bridge is he's relied upon having Mirror installed and configured properly in your system, where MythNet Vision, it's all in there already. You don't have to add anything extra.
Right, absolutely, and that's the whole focus, is just to bring all that functionality into the UI to make it attractive and easily configurable. You know, and that same functionality, I've broken out the update of MythNet Vision into a separate application, and you run MythFill database, or rather the backend runs MythFill database for you once a day. Well, by 2.4, the backend's going to run MythFill net content. And it's going to update all your trees, it's going to update all your RSS feeds, and honestly, probably more for 2.5, but any new item in all of your subscribed RSS feeds, if you subscribe to that RSS feed and said, always download this content, it's going to do that Mirror Bridge job for you. It's going to take any new content in those RSS feeds, download them while you're sleeping, your backend's going to do it for you, and then insert them into your recording.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing that and implementing it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I've been showing my wife this now lately, you know, a bunch of stuff. We've been pulling up some videos on MythNet Vision and whatnot, and it's just amazing that all of that content is there and available and whatnot, and she was pretty impressed by that. And actually, if you get a chance, go check out Yosemite Bear, and he's flipping out over some double rainbow. It is truly something you got to check out, because there's really no words to describe it.
Bear or something. If I didn't mention, that MythNet Vision would be a very interesting, research project, if it weren't for Doug Vaughn's work and some work by this guy Oryk in Australia, but predominantly most of our scripts have been written by one guy, by Doug Vaughn.
Right.
And he's just done amazing work. Hopefully, as people start to see its potential, we'll start to see some more people submitting scripts. And that's another thing, you know. For a long time, it's been, hey, you either work on MythWeb or you work in C++ on MythTV. You know, here's an opportunity for all the people who are like, oh, well, I only know Python. I only know Perl. Great. Fantastic. Why don't you write us a grabber?
Let me ask you, what's involved for doing a grabber? I noticed with the different feeds, you have different Python scripts for each web show that you want to be able to pull in. I guess there's something that you have
Writer
to customize.
Perl, yeah.
Can you just go through the process of what's involved for that?
Well, basically, Ms. NetVision is pretty agnostic to how the grabber decides to do it. The grabber has to conform to a couple of command line options, and it has to output certain, you know, a certain format for each. You know, so essentially, you can write a C program, a Python script, a Perl script, as long as it responds to a version command and outputs a proper format with, you know, the author, the name of the script, the description, a version, and then it can optionally offer a tree view, a searchability, or both a tree and a search. And I've written pretty extensive documentation on the Myth Wiki about exactly how to write a grabber. If you go to the MythNetVision Wiki page, it's linked from there. I think the name of the page is MythNetVision Grabber Script Format. If you go there, you can find exactly how to make your script or program conform to those grabber needs. And basically, it just outputs to standard out this XML format. MythNetVision spawns that application, periodically to update the trees or whenever it's called for a search, and then it takes the output, parses it, and downloads any images that it needs to download and presents it in the UI.
Just looking at that list, like I went on the website today and I was looking at the list of plugins they had. It seems to like grow very fast. I mean, it seems like, you know, you guys are very active on it, and you know, you're adding new ones, you know, every so often, which is great. You know, that's what you want.
Yeah, you know, we added three new grabbers this week. There's a space mashup, a technology mashup, and a PBS grabber. There's thousands of shows and clips and interviews and things like that from PBS. We just added that this week. You know, Doug is just turning these things out fast and furious. And if one guy can do that much, then you know, people start to say, hey, this is pretty cool, you know, as we improve it and as it becomes a little less beta. I think it'll be still sort of a little beta for 2.4, but, as it becomes more and more capable, hopefully we start to see more people writing content scripts.
Yeah, MythNetVision's really promising. You know, I've been running it, you know, since the last release that it's included by default, and it seems really nice. I really like what you guys are doing. You know, I know for a while they had some web content that was available. I forget what the plugin was for it. I just don't remember.
There was a couple.
Yeah, there were a couple.
Somebody who wrote Streams and MythStream.
They weren't very good, though. You know, they were very kind of, you know, very basic. But I really like what you guys are doing. And you're integrating it with the menus and the UI. You got the...
My great big objection to those things was that every single one of them had some nefarious thing it was doing to get this content. You know, it was scraping, or it was, you know, masquerading as some other application, or, you know, all sorts of things. And, you know, and I kept pulling my hair out looking at these things because I'm somebody who is, you know, who's maybe a little bit more strict about that kind of thing than your average person. You know, I'm pulling my hair out because I'm like, you guys, all of this content is freely available. You can just parse the RSS feeds and get all the same content without ever violating their terms of service. So that was my frustration, and that's really where MythNetVision.
I know with the whole Hulu thing, before they had their own dedicated application for Linux and even for Windows, I know a lot of guys were like doing screen scraping to get, you know, that content into different applications. And it was like a cat and mouse game for quite some time where someone would come up with a scraper and then Hulu would break it. And it was back and forth for a long time.
Right. And I won't deny that very occasionally as somebody changes an RSS feed or moves some content around or changes an API, there's going to be periodic need to upgrade the script. But we've literally had one script break in the whole history of MythNetVision because we're developing according to everybody's API, or parsing publicly available RSS information or whatever. We've literally had one script break for about a week and Doug fixed.
Yeah, that's not bad. So what's the official stance with Hulu now? You can't they don't want anybody doing scraping off their stuff. You have to use their sanctioned application.
I mean, like sort of like everybody, nobody wants to be scraped, but we're not scraping them. I mean, we have a Hulu grabber in MythNetVision for what will be 2.4. And we do that by literally aggregating all of their RSS feeds, pulling them all in, and then sort of intelligently resorting all the information. So, for example, you know, I can go to search internet video. I'm in front of my Mythbox right now. You go to search internet video. I can type in Family Guy, and I can select Hulu, and it's going to pull up literally 5 seasons of Family Guy in the search results. And, you know, you hit an item. All they care about is that you play it within the context of their page. You know, and since this NetVision opens up a web browser and plays it within their within the context of their page, it doesn't run afoul of any terms of service.
Right. How is MythVodka doing it? That was a plugin that was fairly active for a while. Right?
I don't think it exists anymore. It didn't compile after 2.1. And then there are a number of people who tried to make it compile against Qt 4, and with limited success. I haven't heard about it in ever. I just don't see why you would do.
I know the XBMC guys were doing the dance, and the Boxy guys were doing the dance for a while.
Right. And actually, you know, Boxy uses a very, very similar approach to what Fitnet Vision does. They do, you know, I'll acknowledge they do a certain amount of stuff with a little bit more polish. Because Boxy is a service, because you connect to the Boxy servers, Boxy does all the parsing and recategorizing of stuff at their end, at the server end, and you basically just connect to their service, and so when you go to Raw, for example, you're pulling in that XML from their servers. You know, we push that work off onto the individual user for a number of reasons, you know, because it puts the responsibility on the user, but also because, you know, it's a little bit more respectful of people.
It gets you guys off the hook.
Well, I mean, you know, there's certainly a certain amount of that, but since we don't violate any terms of service, you know, but even if somebody comes along and writes a grabber that, you know, goes and gets every third person pregnant, you know, that's up to them. We're not going to distribute it.
Right.
You know, we're not going to have anything to do with it. But even if they do decide to use it, then all the work is done by the individual user. All we do is provide an infrastructure.
Well, what are your feelings about Flash on the web? And, you know, I know a lot of these online content guys, they use Flash for the streaming video.
I mean, you know, speaking for myself, I hate Flash. I will be thrilled when somebody, you know, starts turning up with an HTML5 grabber, or, you know, a grabber that parses some site that does all of its playback in HTML5. You know, right now, for the aim of MythNet Vision, Flash is a necessary evil.
Yeah,
in a lot of cases. But I don't like it. I think that, you know, the all the diversity of players and the massive CPU use and just the fact that it's, you know, I mean, you know, you're playing back 720 by 480 video at 98% CPU on
quad. Yeah, it's total resource hog.
Processor. It's ridiculous, you know. So it hasn't done a lot to endear itself to me. The only thing Flash really does is provide content distributors a way to protect their content. And obviously that's the reason that everybody uses it.
Yeah, you can only hope that, you know, HTML5 matures enough and WebM gets more mature and starts getting implemented. That all that will be much easier.
What about the codecs more in general? I guess like with the Myth Video stuff that you do, are you looking at things like VP8 and whatnot as you know compared to like H.264 or anything like that?
Well, we're completely open to supporting whatever. We get all of our codec and container support from upstream libraries. Periodically, 3-4 times a year, Janne Grunau resyncs our libAV codec and libAV format libraries with upstream FFmpeg. So we inherit new support every single time, you know, every single time we do one of those resyncs. There's probably going to be at least one more before 2.4. libvp8, which is Google's VP8 library, is now supported and better supported all the time upstream. So we'll gain VP8 support. That's where all of our codec support comes from. So, you know, for 2.4, undoubtedly we will have VP8 support. You know, we don't care. We you know, especially when it comes to Myth Video, you know, you get the content.
Right. Yeah.
Play it back.
I guess you know
and,
the whole,
and when it comes to,
the whole thing with Flash is, you know, because it's such a resource hog. You know, like, you know, my front ends, which you know, I use the NVIDIA, you know, the Ion stuff, you know, it barely gets by watching back. If I fire up the Hulu player, it's struggling, you know. Sometimes it's really good and it works fine. Sometimes it's like a slideshow, you know.
Right, absolutely. And I think HTML5 will do something to alleviate that. I think that Adobe sees the writing on the wall. I think they realize that that they either need to vastly improve the performance of Flash, otherwise it's going to be really hard in the future to make the case for it, especially if you have people like Netflix and CBS and YouTube providing limited but tangible support for HTML5 and DP8, stuff like that. I think that Adobe is going to have to play a major game of catch up if they want to see Flash, you know, retain dominance.
Yeah, it's sad because I'm starting to see like some sites actually starting to use Microsoft Silverlight, you know, and I'm the 99% Linux user. The only time I actually use some Windows is maybe when I'm at work, you know, at the office. But at home, I'm all Linux here. And it just kills me that there's no native, you know, Netflix application for Linux. You know, I had to go buy a Blu-ray DVD player to get Netflix streaming.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think Silverlight is probably not long for this world. I mean, that's just a gut feeling. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But the uptake has been fairly minimal versus, you know, look at how HTML5 has matured just in the last couple of months. There's way more guys out there using HTML5 than Silverlight. Really positive.
One of the issues, though, is that they seem to get your major, you know, events where they want to be able to stream, you know, something like, say, the Olympics or, like, the NHL playoffs or, you know, they're getting, like, the major, like, sporting events and whatnot that are handling all the streaming stuff. I don't know. I think, are they streaming, like, the Tour de France? I'd have to look and see what that is being streamed in right now, but those types of big-name things are what Silverlight seems to attract, and until something else grabs onto it and says, hey, look at this other thing out here, you know, that, and I don't know, maybe it'll be Google TV or something like that that will kind of maybe, you know, bolster that, but we'll have to wait and see if anything can start, you know, grabbing onto this with the HTML5 stuff and the open codecs.
Right. Well, and it's important to note that in the case of Silverlight, things like the Olympics, NHL playoffs, you know, the stuff that's been, and some of the ESPN content, the stuff that's been exclusive to Silverlight, that Microsoft has paid for the opportunity to be the exclusive provider of that. Not that Silverlight was so attractive to them that, you know, that they were like, ooh, let's do this in Silverlight, but the other way around. You know, and
right.
The one thing that is a little promising is that Microsoft has been extremely unsuccessful about paying their way into market share lately. You know, look at the you know, the fiasco with their phone. Where they sold, what, like 500 whatever the phone was.
The Kin.
That Kin lasted like 6 weeks, yeah.
And they spent something, some ridiculous amount in the hundreds of millions of dollars promoting it, and they literally didn't make back their commercial budget on it. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that Silverlight is not going to become our new video playback overlord.
Yeah, hopefully WebM takes off, you know? That with HTML5 is the great hope. Hopefully it pans out.
Yeah, you know, I like the container format. You know, VP8, you know, for content that's 720 by 480, all right. I'm not wild about VP8 versus H.264 quality-wise, nor am I real confident about, you know, any potential patent and right violations. You know, I'll take anything over Flash.
Yeah, I hear you.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, it's been awesome talking to you, Robert. You know, I'm really glad we got a chance to talk to you. And, you know, we've hit some good topics, and I think we've got more topics to hit at some point. And we'd really love to have you back on the show to talk about some other things and maybe some of the other.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Any time, you know, you guys stay in touch and feel free. You know, you and everyone else, feel free to join us in Myth TV users on Freenode, on IRC. That's really the best place to find all of us. And if, you know, somebody wants to talk about the future of the project or this great idea that they've got that they want to try implementing and they want to get some guidance on how best to do it, you know, we love that stuff. And we're really enthusiastic about people who want to dig in and people who want to take the time to understand rather than just expect that we're always going to make the decisions that sit well with them. So, you know, we welcome that. You guys are welcome. You know, please come join us.
Awesome. You guys are doing a great job. Keep up the great work, and thank you for everything again.
All right, you guys.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
No problem, you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
And that was Robert. Excellent interview. It's great talk to finally get the hold of one of the
definitely.
TV developers.
You know, yes, we're very pleased that you know, we're able to talk to these guys, and they seem, they from what he's saying, they seem really receptive to this, and and want to come on and do this type of stuff, talk about the new stuff that's coming out, talk about help that they need, all that kind of stuff, and we're really grateful for a lot of that.
It's good stuff. It's really good stuff. And with that, Dan, you got any topics to wrap up the show before we head out?
Nope.
I don't have anything right
now. Until next time.
Yeah, until next episode. Mm-mm. Everybody, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you real soon. Bye.
See ya. She knows every episode. She wear the boots that go, go, go. She got a ribbon skirt. She made me play.